Chapter 16. The Bad Place. Jaff took a step towards Drusha and placed the muzzle of her sidearm against his forehead. Expressionless, she reached forwards with her other hand and began patting the pockets of his old coat. She stopped, reached in, and fished out the gun Nail had given him. She stepped back, keeping her weapon trained on him, and put the confiscated gun in the hip pocket of her jacket. Sark had hunched down in the cage in fear and was grunting and moaning again. Over her shoulder she called out, "Clear!" in a strong, loud voice. Her aim never wavered. "How long?" Drusha asked her.
"How long what?"
"How long have you been working against the orders?"
"Since the day I was born, Magos," she said. "I am the product of a cognate breeding school. I was engineered as a savant, precisely the sort of exceptional individual a man like Gregor Eisenhorn finds appealing and useful, the sort of person he recruits."
"I suppose that explains why you've been so unhelpful every step of the way," said Drusha. "Someone like you should have worked out Kestra's location in a matter of hours. But you already knew where it was. You were trying to stop us finding it." She smiled.
"Your face is an open book, Magos Drusha," she said. "Microspasms in your platysma, zygomaticus, and levator labii superiosis, involuntary dilation of the pupils. You are terrified. Your composure is a front. Bravado."
"My levator labii superiosis is doing just fine," replied Drusha. "Of course I'm terrified. You just killed a man, and you're aiming a gun at me. You realize your fate will be appalling." "I don't know what it will be precisely, but I doubt the Inquisition treats heretics with much mercy."
"It does not," she agreed. "But then you're not working with the Inquisition. The Rot God King's holy orders have no inkling of this affair. Eisenhorn is a rogue, Magos. He is extreme and dangerous even by their standards. They declared him hereticus many years ago, and they hunt him as keenly as they hunt the cognitae. There. The platysma again. You didn't know that."
"I guessed," said Drusha. "This whole operation lacked legitimacy. I don't know him well, but I believe he is determined—" "Oh, Eisenhorn believes his cause is just in his arrogance. And he hunts for you?"
"Bringing down the cognitae is his life's work," she said. "The ruthless zeal with which he pursues us is the main reason he was disowned by his Ordo masters." "Be clear, Magos Drusha. No one is waiting to hear from him. No one is coming to save you. No one knows you're here. He's done. You're all done."
"You say that confidently, Mademoiselle Jaff, but you're not certain, are you? A twitch of the masseter, a little tremble of the corrugator supercilii. Doubt, plain as day." Jaff frowned and shot her free hand to her face involuntarily.
"You're a little shit," she said, glaring at him.
Drusha smiled back. He was no reader of micro-expressions. He'd made it up just to rattle her. He heard footsteps. A man was coming up the metal steps onto the gantry. He was tall and heavy-set, with piercing violet eyes that contrasted strangely with his olive skin, jet-black hair and full beard. He wore a leather jack suit with a mesh armor jacket. A large auto-rifle hung across his shoulder. Three people followed him, a hard-faced woman with cropped red hair, a tall, heavily tattooed man, and an overweight man with hooded eyes.
"Why is he alive, Jaff?"
the bearded man asked. His voice was extraordinarily deep.
"A usable subject, Goblika," she replied. "High intelligence quotient."
The man looked at Drusha as if he was an annoying stain on a good carpet. Goblika. Drusha recognized the name. The heretic Eisenhorn's interrogator had been hunting on Gershom.
"Have you questioned him?"
Goblika asked Jaff.
"He knows nothing."
"Establish that as a fact,"
hissed Goblika.
"Thanks to your poor work, the agents of the damn Ordos are inside the hall. I want them all found and extinguished, so we'd better know everything they know."
Drusha saw the look on Jaff's face. That was a micro-expression he understood. Jaff was terrified of Goblika. Drusha had no doubt this stemmed from Goblika's imposing physicality and charming manners, but he was also sure Jaff had something to prove. She hadn't sprung the trap and killed them all cleanly at Helter. She'd let them get inside Kestra. She was clearly keen to demonstrate her competence and make up for the error. Drusha doubted the cognitae offered much in the way of second chances to those in their service.
"Where's Eisenhorn?"
Jaff asked, her weapon still aimed.
I don't know, said Drusha.
True?
Asked Gablika. Yes, said Jaff. He couldn't cloak a response to that question.
Gablika nodded.
Take him down to the cellar cages, said Gablika.
Jaff hesitated.
What?
Gablika asked.
Can't Blague or Streak I'll do it? She asked.
Do it your bloody self, Jaff,
sneered the overweight man.
I want to get back out, said Jaff to Gablika. Betancourt is outside. The remaining loose end. I need to deal with her, and I'm the best choice to get close to her.
Put him away. Then you can go, said Gablika.
Jaff looked at Drusha and gestured with her gun. He went where she told him to go. Jaff walked behind him, covering him with her weapon. They descended from the gantry and followed a route down the tower, crossing platforms and walking down suspended staircases, the brass wheels and gears of the great machine whirring around them. Drusha tried not to feel alarm at the immense drop below them. His good old fear of heights. A gun at his back served to focus his mind.
"What does it do?" he asked. "Shut up," she said.
"You're making something. This machine. It's very old, isn't it?"
"Drusha, you're not that useful. Shut up!"
Drusha felt an odd tingling sensation in the base of his skull. He stopped walking and leaned on a handrail.
"Keep walking," she said.
"Just a minute," Drusha said. "I feel faint." He looked out at the machinery, at the other platforms and walkways. He looked at the shadows, hoping. The tingle throbbed in the back of his head. He straightened up. All right, he said. I feel better now. He looked at Jaff and gestured at the great machine.
Come on, how old? He asked.
She jabbed the gun in his ribs.
Walk, she hissed.
You can't blame me for being fascinated, mademoiselle. It's my job to inquire. My life's work.
As of now, you have no life.
He looked around thoughtfully.
These tests. What is my fate going to be, Audler?
She frowned at him.
Painful, she said.
Oh, he shrugged. That's a shame.
I really don't do pain well. What sort of pain?
Walk, she snapped. Seriously, so I can brace myself. She put the gun against his forehead again.
Be obedient, she said. Shut up and walk. You are very annoying.
So I've been told, said Drusha.
You know, I don't think I will walk any more. I think, on balance, I'd rather die than submit to these tests you mentioned. I'm not good with pain. I'd rather it was quick.
He closed his eyes. There was a sharp crack. Drusha opened his eyes again. Audler Jaff's limp body lay at his feet.
You took your time, Drusha said. I didn't know how much more crap I could come out with to keep her distracted.
You did just fine, said Eisenhorn.
Have you killed her? Drusha said.
Eisenhorn hunched over her body.
Not yet, he said.
She killed Nail, said Drusha.
She has betrayed me on every level,
replied Eisenhorn. He searched Jaff's pockets, found Drusha's gun, and held it out to him.
I was actually quite pleased to see the back of that, Drusha said.
Take it, Magos. You need to be armed. I think we're the only two left.
Drusha took the gun reluctantly.
I heard you whisper in my head, he said.
He rubbed the back of his skull.
Right in the back there. It was unpleasant.
I had to signal to you without her hearing, said Eisenhorn. I had to get you to stop so I could get close. I didn't want to risk a shot. It wasn't easy.
Why? Asked Drusha.
What do you mean? Eisenhorn let out a long, slow breath. Drusha could see that his flesh was pallid, and he was perspiring.
This place, he confessed. This machine. It's interfering with my mind. It's radiating a latent power that's conflicting with my Psychana gifts. It's taking more effort than usual to use them. And when I do, I can manage short range only.
Then don't, said Drusha. You'll exhaust yourself.
I'll use what I have to, Magos, Eisenhorn replied. When I have to, for as long as I can. My gifts are about the only edge we have over the cognite.
What is this machine, Inquisitor?
I'm not certain, replied Eisenhorn. But I think it's a device called an immaterium loom.
Which is?
It spins things out of the warp, said Eisenhorn. It binds the etheric with the physical. There have been rumors for centuries that the cognite were trying to build one. I didn't give those rumors much credence, but yet again the cognite dismay me.
He hoisted Jaff's limp body upright and glanced at Drusha.
"Can you support her? It'll only be for a moment."
Drusha moved forwards to help.
"Immaterium looms are volatile things," said Eisenhorn. "No one's ever made one before, though many have tried over the millennia. Heretics and imperial adepts alike. All prototypes have built up interference patterns with the fabric of reality and imploded."
"But this place, it isn't reality?" asked Drusha, propping Jaff upright.
"As usual, you're sharp,"
said Eisenhorn.
"This place, Kestra, is a weak point in the fabric between our reality and the warp. I think it always has been. A liminal place of monsters, feared by the ancient Eudaric tribes who gave it its ominous name, becoming part of folklore, as all such bad places do. The Cognitae have exploited this weakness in real space fabric and built this place in the in-between."
"To hide?"
"Yes. And now I know they can do it, I realize they may have other such bolt holes across the Imperium in other bad places. Which is why they have always been so damned elusive. But here, there is a secondary purpose."
"Because we're in the warp?" asked Drusha.
"We're in an interstitial space between reality and the warp," Eisenhorn replied. "It's called an extimate zone. But yes, it is a laboratory-perfect environment in which to build an immaterium loom and set it running without risk of real space contamination interfering with its function."
"That's all speculation, I take it?" asked Drusha.
"For now. Let's ask Jaff about it," said Eisenhorn. "Hold her."
He stepped back.
"Audler."
Drusha shivered. He felt the woman quiver in his arms. Her head snapped upright.
"Should you be doing that?" he asked nervously. "I mean, if your powers are limited and—"
"I need information," said Eisenhorn. "Let her go and step away."
Drusha moved to Eisenhorn's side. Audler Jaff was standing upright, clenched stiffly and awkwardly. Her eyes were open, but she was looking at nothing.
"Please," she whispered.
"I trusted you."
Frost crystals began to form on the metal decking around her feet.
"You brought us into a trap."
"You brought yourself, Eisenhorn," she whispered. "Inchabel sniffed out the traces of our work here on Gershom. It was an ideal opportunity to entice you here and remove your persistent opposition."
"A trap. To silence me."
"And your retinue," she said. "All loose ends."
"You never expected us to get inside this place, though, did you? You meant to kill me. All of us. At Helter."
Jaff's eyes narrowed.
"You got further than expected," she said. "Thanks to Drusha. I animated the Revenant at Helter, but it was not sufficient. I was regrouping to make another attempt. You pushed on, despite my efforts to divert you. You opened Kestra's doors, but we have adjusted. We improvise well."
"Is this the truth?" Drusha whispered to Eisenhorn. Eisenhorn was concentrating hard. He looked sick. His cheeks were flushed, and there was sweat on his forehead.
"She can't lie," he grunted. "Not given the psionic coercion I am using."
"Is Max alive?" Drusha asked Jaff. "Have you killed her? Have you killed the others?"
"Don't interrupt,"
snapped Eisenhorn. He was struggling to focus.
"Is this an immaterium loom?"
"Yes,"
Jaff shivered, every word tight and unwilling.
"How long has it been here?"
16 centuries, since it was built. Watched over by a succession of magi."
"Of which Draven Sark is the latest?"
"The greatest. He found his grandfather's samples. The torment. The chaos disease. From it, he refined an inoculation. A viral enhancement that would render test subjects immune to etheric corruption. Thus they might withstand the first stages of transformation by the loom."
"Has this worked?"
"There is a high wastage of test subjects," said Jaff.
Drusha could see the horrified look in her eyes. She was fighting not to say these things, and they were coming out anyway.
"A high wastage. But the process has now worked. It worked on Sark. Such devotion. Such self-sacrifice. Such perfection." He has made it work the way Lillian wanted it to.
To do what?
To construct vessels, gasped Jaff. Blood was beginning to seep from her left nostril. Flesh is weak. What we wish to accomplish surpasses the limits of the human form. We are building better vessels. Vessels that can survive the stresses involved. We call them grails. They are precious, but hard to make.
I have met a grail before. Grail ochre.
Jaff shook as if the name hurt her.
It said it was the Yellow King, or that it served the Yellow King.
It does,
whined Jaff.
And Orpheus. Is that this king's name?
Please stop this, she wailed.
Drusha glanced at Eisenhorn in alarm. Eisenhorn was trembling. His lips had peeled back to reveal his clenched teeth. He looked to be in as much pain as Jaff.
Tell me.
Lillian is making the grail vessels to serve the king in yellow, she moaned.
And they are vessels for what?
To contain the truth of the warp. To be strong enough to speak not one word of Enuncia, but all the words. A fluency in the first language that would shatter human form.
Like demon hosts, but in reverse. A human soul wrapped in an etheric body, rather than an etheric force bound in human flesh.
Exactly. They are you demonic beings.
Good demons. I would take issue with your terminology.
Jaff snorted, amused. Blood bubbled at her nostrils.
They are the future, and they are hope, she said. Through the grails, the truth may be whispered in the ear of the rot god king and end his domination.
Well, that makes so much sense now she puts it like that, said Drusha.
Please be quiet, said
Eisenhorn with considerable effort. Jaff was starting to tremble. Blood dripped from her nose, and the drops froze in the ice around her feet.
How many has he made? How many of these grails has he built?
The first eight. They have gone to the Yellow King to be deployed.
Where?
Jaff coughed. Blood frothed over her lip. Blood was dribbling from her nose and running from her tear ducts.
Please stop,
she spluttered.
Where?
Queen Mab.
Where is that?
Sangkor in Angelus.
Where is Lillian Chase?
Jaff began to choke.
Where is she?
Jaff was quivering wildly. She vomited blood down her front.
What is the king in yellow?
Please,
Jaff gurgled. Her left eyeball burst.
Is Max alive?
Drusha yelled. She shrieked the word, yes, as she died.